In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Not even a sign of road rage. He is cool, calm, and collected. Welcome, Alan.
Well, what are you going to do? It's just one of those things that, you know, just sort of happens sometimes when you're relying on technology to make sure that things work the way they're supposed to. We're just at the light right down the street here, and it just cycled through the other two sides like three times before I could before they'd let me go. Changed just in time for some clearly very busy and important fellow to blow by on the right side and, you know, scoot through, drive straight through the intersection in the turn only lane.
Sure.
And almost got the person right in front of me.
Nice.
But I'm here. I've made it through, and it's one of those things where, you know, under ordinary circumstances, I might get mad, but if I'm coming to see you guys, it's hard to be upset.
And coming off a big weekend, happy anniversary, which you celebrated, 12 years of wedded bliss yesterday.
Hard to believe, isn't it?
It is hard to believe.
Like, it's one of those things where, I couldn't really understand it when it was happening, let alone like 12 years later.
And it was a day a lot like today.
You know, it's the joke is that Sheridan's mom will occasionally call her and be like, you know, it's 111 degrees on the back patio right now. Still not as hot as the day you got married. And, you know, she's not wrong. It was something. It was one of those days. It is one of the core memories, I think, for a lot of people from that day. It was great.
And Sheridan's birthday yesterday as well.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Yes. So, a lot of celebrating. We got out of town a little bit over the weekend. We went down... We went down east for the 4th, just to see her fam, her sister and her family came up. So we gathered there for a couple of days and kind of settled into a nice quiet kind of day. We had a celebratory dinner on Saturday night because we figured Sunday night would be kind of a tough sell, and have just generally been kicking around. And I'm officially off this week.
Nice.
So I don't really have much of anything to do. Our actual day proper anniversary was spent. We went to the farmer's market, and then we drove up to Bissell Brothers Three Rivers for a beer and a snack, and then came home and watched the first half of the third season of The Bear.
Oh, isn't it great?
It's so far so good. I've been seeing
non-negotiables, Alan. Non-negotiables.
You know, I've been seeing a lot of people sort of complain.
Me too. And I think it's great because I love the fact that it delves deeper into the characters.
Well, that's the thing. It's like we're three seasons in. Like, you know, I don't need more origin stories. Like, it's right. I know where these people come from. Tell me where they are. Tell me where they're going.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I want. And not for nothing, but I saw that the first episode of the season in particular was very divisive because it was very montage-y, very limited dialogue. I loved it.
I did too.
I straight up loved it. Yep. I was like, yes.
And the perfect setup for episode 2, which really got us to where we are now.
Exactly. So yeah, we did the first 5 last night. We'll probably try to parse them out a little bit more.
Wait till you get to the episode called Ice Chips.
Okay.
An absolute tour de force from Abby Elliott. Brilliant work.
She's so good, man.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so weird. It's so weird to think that's Chris Elliott's kid.
Yeah.
It's weird. But she's great. I mean, whatever. Like, everybody, like, top to bottom, that cast is just stacked.
That's
and
so
it's
good.
Like, so yeah. So we enjoyed doing that. And so that's kind of how the weekend went.
Speaking of tour de force performances, we haven't talked with you. You told us about it in advance, but we were off last week. Rave reviews for your one-man performance at Port Fringe. Tell us how it all went.
You know, it's crazy, right? Like, one of the things I love about Fringe Theater in general, and Port Fringe in particular, is that it gives you the opportunity to try stuff. To do things that are maybe a little bit outside the norm. I don't know. Like, I still don't know what to call what I did. The show was titled Illuminati or Illuminice, A Secret History of Santa Claus. And it was basically, I hadn't really formulated it this way, but Sheridan and I were talking about it. And she used the phrase academic as performer, and I was like, okay, that kind of and sort of tied that in with the sort of general ethos of the sage on the stage, in terms of like the traditional model of academia, where it's like you have one very wise person who stands up there and tells everybody what the deal is. Like, you know, the origins of that format were, you know, it was literally someone standing up there reading a book to people, because, you know, they didn't have a lot of books, and they didn't have a lot of literacy. And so it's like, that's what that has evolved from.
Right.
So yeah, I put together a presentation. It was about 40 minutes. I did it. It was my first PowerPoint. I made a PowerPoint that we projected. Much thanks to Sheridan, who made sure that I didn't just throw the thing through a GD window at one point. And then, yeah, I did a 40-minute lecture, and then so my sort of Port Fringe go-to as part of, I've been doing the pop-up series of performances for a number of years, is I've created this character also named Alan Adams, who basically finds very tenuous and weird connections within cultural works and expounds upon them. Those traditionally had been like 5-minute segments, which, you know, so it's a lot of like jamming a lot of information in as much as I can. This allowed me to spread my wings a little bit more. Wasn't sure it was going to work. But I will say that I had a very, I was very lucky with my audience. I had a lot of friendly faces, a lot of people who are familiar. And fringe audiences are more likely to get it anyway when you're doing something that's a little little offbeat. But where it really kind of came together, and I was kind of surprised, was the question and answer session that I did at the end. I had actually reached out to a few of my friends who were going to be there and gave them questions to ask, because I'm like, if I do a Q&A and nobody asks any questions, like, that's going to suck, and I don't know how this is going to be received at all. I've never done anything like this. Honestly, the only person who had heard it out loud besides myself was Sheridan. Like, I hadn't done it in front of people, so I had no idea like what was going to work, what wasn't. But the response during the piece was very strong, very positive. So I'm like, okay, I'm doing okay. So I get to the Q&A and I'm like, okay, so we've got some time. Does anyone have any questions? Rich, like 35 hands shot up. It was wonderful. And so not only am I like, oh, well, I don't, you know, I've you know, sort of thought about the questions that I've fed my folks, but it's like, oh, so I'm working without a net now. Like I just got
all improv, baby.
That's what I'm saying. And it's just like, it's like, okay, I'm going to stay in character, and I'm going to use the admittedly vast amount of weird crap I learned in the process of putting this together, and we're going to go for it. And yes, it was successful beyond any beyond anything I could have imagined.
Well, let's see here. From the Port Fringe Committee, awards for achievement in performance, achievement in writing, achievement in tech, the This Is Fringe Award, and then the Artist Choice Award for the late night shows.
That last one's the one that really sort of that really hit home for me, because these are mostly people who work together and they know each other and they've been like part of this scene together for such a long time. And to have someone who's still, I mean, like I've done a couple of things, but I've never done Port Fringe proper. Like, I'm very much an outsider still. And so for me to come in and for them to sort of acknowledge the work with that sort of recognition was really great. Like, it felt really good, really rewarding, and it felt like all the effort and time that I had invested in making this happen really paid off. So I was very fortunate. They're a wonderful crew, and I can't wait to see what happens next year.
Well, and as I said online, now we need a Bangor area performance of this.
Well, we'll see about that. the truth is, I had a couple of ideas, but the last week or so has not been kind to those places where I might engaged. That's a conversation for a different time, but like not a great week for the Bangor creative scene in a lot of ways, which is kind of a bummer. But
we'll be talking about that on The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. At least one of them.
I imagined you
coming
might.
Up here as well. Alan Adams with us here in studio. Well, have you seen any movies since last we visited?
You know, I did see, I did actually, we watched one today, actually. We were... we were at home and we're like, you know, we had Wimbledon on and we're like, oh, right. The new Beverly Hills Cop movie came out this weekend.
Oh, yeah. And Axel
so,
F, right?
Yeah. So it's like, okay, let's give it a go. Let's see what we got here. And, you know, low expectations. We've seen time and again that more often than not, these kind of decades late sequels, because Beverly Hills Cop 3 came out in like 1994. So we're talking like 30 years since the last movie. So, you know, you're kind of like, oh, how is this gonna, because in retro, like, I haven't watched those movies in a long time. I have a hunch that there are aspects that are problematic.
Right.
It was Eddie Murphy in the 80s. You know what I mean? Like, that was his whole shtick. Like, a lot of what he did wouldn't fly today. But I'm like, okay, I'm going to go in. I'm like, so you wonder, it's like, well, who's back? It's been 30 years. Like, I mean, and it turns out just about everybody.
Yeah.
Just about everybody came
back. I was so excited to see on Instagram a picture of Eddie with John Ashton and Judge Reinhold.
Well, like I was like, and again, I don't mean this to sound flip, but I'm like, holy crap, John Ashton's still alive.
Right.
Like, just, I mean, because it's been like he was looking rough around the edges 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's so to see that, you know, and like you mentioned Judge Reinhold, like Paul Reiser's back. Bronson Pinchot came back. Yes. You know what I mean? And it's like.
And he looks phenomenal, by the way. I don't know what he's doing, but I want to follow his lead.
Well, and it's like, and it looks, and it doesn't look like, I mean, I'm sure there are artificial aspects, but it doesn't look like whoever's doing it is doing a great job.
Right.
We'll put it that way.
Yes.
But yeah, and we have some new faces as well, including Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who's great. Taylor Page, who plays Axel's estranged daughter. And Kevin Bacon turns up, which, you know, you're always happy to see Kevin Bacon. But yeah, I could go into the plot. These movies really aren't about plot per se. But basically, Axel Foley, still a cop in Detroit. We see him. We actually see him. We have a whole opening set piece where he basically sweet talks one of his fellow officers into going to a hockey game with him because they're going to try to bust up some sort of robbery ring. But he's not supposed to be working on it, so it's going to be the other guy's bust. As you might imagine, things go sideways pretty quickly, and before you know it, he's driving a city snowplow down the wrong way down a one-way street and just blowing stuff up left and right, and I'm just gonna call him Chief Paul Reiser. it's like you can't do that anymore, Axel, he's like, oh, we'll just fix it like we always fix it. But then it turns out that the chief is thinking about maybe retiring because, again, they've all been doing this for like 50 years at this point. But that's when we see that our man Bobby, played by Judge Reinhold, has gotten into he's investigating some potentially dirty cops, and there's a wrongfully accused murderer. As we find out that Axel's daughter Jane is a lawyer. And so she's representing a wrongfully accused young man. Then we come back. We meet back up with Chief John Ashton and the new guy, the new cop. That's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who wouldn't you know it, has a pre-existing relationship with Axel's daughter, and so that complicates things as well. And then before you know it, Axel's in it up to his eyeballs, and we're just going to have to keep digging to find out how deep this goes, Rich. And that's basically it. It's an excuse for Eddie to be Eddie. Like, he's definitely thickened up, but I mean, he's still like, there's still that sort of that twinkle in the eye is still there. It's not a great movie, but I wasn't expecting it to be great. It's fun. Like, I had a good time, and it was really fun to sort of re-engage with these characters. Bronson Pinchot, like, he's only in a couple of scenes, but he comes in hot. Like, Serge comes in hot with all the weird pronunciations and all that stuff. Like, it's one of those things where you're almost like, has he just been practicing this off and on the off chance that he gets to do this again? Because, like, it's like between Serge and Balki Bartokomous, like, that's basically Bronson Pinchot in a nutshell. But, you know, it's great to see, like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I can't remember the last thing I saw Joseph Gordon-Levitt in, and I feel like he's one of these guys who takes periodic breaks, and it's interesting that this is the one that he came back to. I mentioned that to Sheridan, and she's like, well, you know, he probably loved these movies when he was like 10. And it's like, oh, right, because again, like Beverly Hills Cop came out in 1984.
Wow.
Like lifetimes have been lived in the time since that first movie came out. And so sort of getting the chance to reinvestigate these characters, you know, there's, we'll put it in scare quotes, growth. But I mean, but Axel F's going to Axel F, you know what I mean? Bye. Like that's his whole deal. I will say the Axel F theme is utilized with great precision throughout this film.
Nice.
Well, it's like I'm always here for variations on a theme when it comes to that. And so like you have like the, you know, you first hear it and it's the bouncy original and you're like, oh yeah, I'm ready for this. But then they have like moments where they like slow it down and make it ominous. And then they chop it up a little bit, and it's like, what is like? You just hear like little bits and pieces, and it just ties it all together in a way that I enjoyed a great deal more than I anticipated.
I was just looking up Harold Faltermeyer to see if he's still. He's only 72. He's pretty young when he wrote that.
So he was. Well, what, I mean, he was
late 20s, early 30s.
I was going to say probably right around 30, huh?
Yeah.
Man, it's nice to write your meal ticket that early, man.
Yeah,
just like
exactly.
But yeah, and it was a great soundtrack, one that was very aware of the audience for this movie. Like a lot of 80s tracks, a lot of synth music. Like it's like, like we know who's here.
Right.
We know why they're here. We're going to give them that. And you know, like for Netflix, that's actually, I would argue that's progress. Like that's like they, I it did not. It did not feel as Netflix sheeny as some of these as movies have, and a ton of practical work, which I'm always excited about, like lots of stunt work and things like that. So yeah, is it like, I mean, it's not going to win, you know, Eddie's not going to win any Oscars, but honestly, like it was a really good time.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to checking it out. Thanks, Al.
Hey, my pleasure.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you too.
Alan Adams talking movies here on Pass the Popcorn.